This is the AdNonTech Podcast, conversations about education, technology, and culture, with Dr. Doug Reed and Dr. Matt Stranick. Thank you for joining us. Everybody hither and yon, especially those, I think, perhaps to the yawn. I've expressed before that that's my favorite side of that paradigm. This is the latest in a series of what we're calling Ed Non-Tech Conversations, if you will, to distinguish between this and the regular run of podcasts, as you perhaps may, or as the case may be, may not have checked out previous to now. Instead of the inestimable Dr. Doug Reed joining me here, we're actually expanding the scope of the entire show, the entire format, by having educators from various varieties coming in and just having a bit of a jaw, a bit of a convo, if you will, speaking to experiences perhaps both inside the classroom and without, as the case may be. So joining here, a really awesome friend of mine from years back, which I'm sure we'll get into, and also the partner of another awesome friend of mine from years back, circa Fredericton, New Brunswick. Picture it, if you will. You know, like on the Golden Girls, you know, the Estelle Getty character. She's always, picture it, Sicily, 1935 or whatever. Picture it, Fredericton, 1994. If you're AI, being AI, this is what it might look like. And honestly, it was a while ago, so I'm thinking probably pretty accurate.
It's Kathleen actually pretty McKee, except for the width of the street.
It's got the dimensions down, eh?
Yeah.
So before we get too far into it, and before I ramble us off even maybe a bit more of the track, setting you up here with the general background, the general context, with my excellent friend from years back. I think we can say we're pretty excellent friends. We're still in touch at this point. Yeah, Kathleen McPhee. That's your professional married up name that you go with?
My only name.
Your only name. Okay. Yeah. No middle names? Do you have a middle name?
No, I've got two middle names, actually.
Two middle names.
In terms of my name, nothing's ever changed for me.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, so I guess to start with then, just as per the public for this show, which can vary anywhere, I've noticed from about three or four unique listeners to in the upper tens and even beyond that. So Kathleen has been a social work practitioner of, would you say now 10 or 15 years has it been?
Yeah.
15 years. So I find it interesting to note, folks, for those playing along at home, somewhere on the timeline, I myself got into what I do now, education, about, like I left for Qatar 15 and a half years ago. So it's just kind of interesting to note that that's sort of around the time that you kind of got dialed into your work as a social worker. And you accomplished that program from, is it a one-year program at St. Thomas for that or something longer?
So at that time, it was like a year and a half.
Okay.
That was when I did it. It was the first time they had switched to this new model. It used to be like you would do 2 years of arts and then you do 2 years of social work. You apply to social work and then do your 2 years and you get your BSW. And then they changed it to a post-degree model. So you had to have some kind of degree to be able to apply. So I did my first degree at STU as well.
What was your major?
In the end, it was psych, but there was about 10 of them in there.
I kind of...
wanted to get it done.
That was really one of the things that I thought, actually, besides the small classes and pretty dedicated, awesome professors, that was something that kind of distinguished the STU experience. I remember it sort of being like, well, I mean, if you're going to do an arts degree around here, why would you even bother going to UNB? Right. I kind of remember those hacky sack kind of conversations. So, I mean, we're talking about our sort of respective kind of professional careers, but I think we'd be missing something in the conversation if we didn't dial it back to the mid-1990s-ish, thereabouts, when Kathleen was a young woman who was working at, I don't know, should we name the coffee shop? A certain place, we're riding. Queen Street, downtown Fredericton. You'd be doing yourself a disservice at that time if you didn't go into Molly's coffee shop. Yeah. She was Kathleen at the time was one of these really cool, you know, young women who worked in Molly's. Really. And me and my sort of gang of kind of whatever we were, the kids who weren't playing sports, were hanging out. Right, exactly so. Fredericton was small at the time, and the downtown younger people just kind of sort of gravitated towards one another. And that was sort of within a backing context of a lot of strong interest in, you know, the punk and alternative music and and Indian alternative culture. Such was the style at the time.
For sure.
And so I think that has certainly, that whole kind of time, I mean, I didn't get into what I'm doing now until my late 20s/early 30s. And I'm saying thereabouts for you, more or less, right?
Yeah. So. I don't know if you're aware, but it actually took me, it was over the course of 13 years to finish my BA. There was a lot of back and forth there.
But I mean, again, to speak to our dear, beloved alma mater, even though I don't consider myself Catholic whatsoever, but still, you know, but still, the fact that you were able to sort of stay on the roster, keep trying it out, keep cycling it through, and eventually you come out with something and having learned something about yourself. So for me, I mean, I had no idea I was going to get into education when I sort of crossed the line with my, you know, English/philosophy, again, very much like, okay, what electives can I take this particular year to kind of get me out of here with the parchment? I really looked at my own education from a kind of a mercenary standpoint. And so I guess before we kind of get into what your teaching, you know, context has been and is, I'd be interested to know, within your career as a social worker, like, you didn't start out in child protection or anything. Did you start in child protection? Okay, yeah. So then I guess, would you be able to just sort of describe briefly your trajectory as a social worker from the point of being in that program to where you are now?
Sure. Yeah. So at the time when I graduated, there were there was a big lack of social work work, and I saw a lot of my classmates going off to Newfoundland. They were doing, you know, they would pay for you to go, and they'd give you $5,000 or $10,000, however long you would decide to sign up for.
Wow.
I never had any interest in child protection. I knew I didn't have interest in child protection, but I'm looking around me saying like, oh, like, and I happen to have a family connection who continually asked me, hey, Kathleen, are you going to apply to the department? And so at some point I was like, well, I guess I better apply. And I had a conversation with my husband at that time saying, I don't think this is what I want to do, but I'm going to try it for a year. And are you cool with me possibly leaving at the end of that year and pursuing work at a nonprofit for probably half the money? Which is essentially, that's exactly what happened. But So I did child protection for a year. I learned a ton. I would actually encourage all new social workers to do child protection, because the learning curve is big. Like, there is a lot to know, but I mean, you make tons of connections in the community. You learn about how all the systems work. It really gives you an inside view into what's good and what's not so great about the system. And I know it's better today than it was when I was there, for sure. So I spent a year doing child protection. It made me depressed, so I left. And
I really think you have to be cut out specifically
yes.
for that kind of work in yeah. order to do it for any kind yeah. of a long term. Just to sort of speak briefly to having local connections, I mean, so again, folks, just to kind of unpack the personal a little bit here. Kathleen, you referred to your husband, married to the same guy the whole time, folks, just to make it explicit. And Mike Lee is really a friend of mine since I was in middle school. I mean, if you count the time that we were in the Albert Street percussion section together, I'd be like bass drum, and Mike's, you know, actually playing on the kit, and, you know, and I'm just going, well, but, you know, so, we go back a bit of a ways. Part of what I was thinking, again, not to speak to Mike thing necessarily, but is he's a guy who, again, another person who went to St. Thomas, and similar to you, he took a decade.
He graduated after me. So.
Right. Yeah. Like, he started when I started, and then he finished after you finished, right?
Yeah.
So again, just to kind of speak to, and then now, again, to sort of speak just briefly more to Mike, the fact that he's doing something within a local government setting, within a manager capacity now, that's quite removed from the program matter from the original degree.
Especially when you consider what his major was.
Precisely, you know, so. It was religious studies.
Yes.
I remember. I remember, like, the whole period of time when Mike was doing that, just like, you know, it's a good one as far as it goes, I think. Right. Some pretty quite awesome, unique insights into the human condition, right? And that's really, I think, now that I'm kind of in this meta educator deal, you know, like coaching and development and learning technology and whatnot, I really do appreciate the value of that sort of, however long it takes, right? If it takes you, you know, 3 years to power through it because you're doing courses in the summer, or it takes you, you know, a decade and a half. I mean, you learn something about yourself. You learn how to learn. You develop critical, 100%. You know, discernment and literacy skills and all kinds of stuff that just you really can't. It's hard to quantify. But then as you get further along into your career, at least it's what's happened for me, I go, wow, that really was the basis for so much other of what I've been doing now with this, even if it's not directly related. So I guess that brings us then to you didn't wait very long then, as I recall, before you completed your master's degree, did you not? I mean, did you wait for a while?
There was 10 years or 11 maybe in between. So I did major in child protection. I was unemployed for 6 months. Didn't do a whole lot with that time, but I did volunteer to co-facilitate a men's group, a group for men who've been violent with their female partners down at Family Enrichment here. And I had always kind of liked, I did a lot of referrals to them when I was in child protection, and I kind of liked the programs that they had running there, and I thought that'd be a cool place to work. And I had expressed that to a friend of mine who was working there. And then one day she called me up and said, I'm moving. Do you want to come in for an interview? While I was unemployed. And so I spent the next 10 years of my career there doing counseling and running groups.
And so that's a natural, that was something of a natural fit for you, right? I mean, in as much as unlike a lot of your colleagues, you were able to remain local and carve yourself out a path removed from, you know, something that obviously wasn't going to be sustainable for you for the long term in terms of the child protection stuff. So, And can I just ask then, I guess, like, what is it about the counseling setting or milieu or however you want to think of it that resonated for you to the point that you were able to invest a decade with that?
Well, it's funny because it was another area that I didn't really actually have that much of an interest in at the outset. But during my time in child protection, one of the things that I found really frustrating was my inability to really sit and work with people, you know, to give the time that was necessary to, you know, help them to kind of get from here to here or whatever it was that they needed. And so that was, that's when I started thinking, well, I guess counseling is kind of an avenue to that. And I hadn't really considered it that way. So I had very little experience in terms of actual, like, doing one-on-one counseling. I had done, you know, I'd volunteered and, you know, done crisis line and stuff like that for years. So that was a big learning curve too.
Stuff like that. Your stuff like that is like, for me, stuff like that is like, oh, well, you know, I do a little blog or I do a little podcast episode or something. You're just like crisis line. I mean, I gotta say, having social workers in my family, not the least of whom being my dad, mm-hmm. my aunt, and my, you know, her husband, my uncle Corey, you know, these are people who have spent very large amounts of their careers in social work. And I'm just like, the stuff that passes for recreation amongst you people, you're just like, I'm going to get, when I'm not, you know, helping these people who are really in need of help, I'm just spending my recreational time helping people who need help. I mean, I know the world needs more people like you. It's sort of like how I kind of look at K-12 educators, like, wow, you're doing an amazing thing. And I don't know that I could do that, but,
anybody that does work with kids, I'm kind of in awe, and I'm like, thank goodness you exist.
No kidding.
That's
right?
Not my skill.
No kidding about them kids. So just, that's kind of my own kind of just, again, to sort of inform my further, you know, so when Kathleen, I approached a few people just to sort of say who would be interested in speaking to teaching, preferably outside of this little education area, right? You're the first person that we've had on this program in this format that's actually coming from a completely different credential, right? Right. Because you're from the MSW. So then what can you did that through, you did the MSW through, largely through distance, am I right? Through Memorial?
Yeah. Yep, at Memorial in Newfoundland. So, and I guess I did do, yeah, so the last 3 years I was at Family Enrichment, I was just doing it one course at a time, paying for it out of pocket. It was very doable. And then we had three classes where we would have institutes where we'd have to go for 10 days, 2 weeks kind of thing meet up with our classmates and actually sit in the classroom, which was a lovely change.
I'm sure, yeah. I when I was doing my... not so much during the master's that I did, but during my doctoral program, like during the residency, having this personal engagement with people, because you move as a cohort, right, through the online stuff. Seriously, like, I recognize the commitment that it takes to place into that in addition to working. I have people like, you know, John Bowie, who completed his Master of Library Science, very similar fashion, just one course at a time over a number of years. You were sort of in a situation where your kids were a bit older, right? What was the juggling family like?
By the time I started my master's, Oliver was already out of the house.
Yeah.
Like for a couple of few years. And then Colin was in, he was in high school. I mean, he graduated 2020. He's one of those unfortunate 2020 kids. So he was a high school student. I mean, he didn't need a lot of, I could go shut myself in my room and read and write.
Right. Cause he was shutting himself in his room or, running the streets. I was going to say running the streets, but knowing your kids actually, I mean, at least in Fredericton, I mean, we were running the streets. Okay?
Yeah.
We were running them streets.
That street right there.
the next generation of kids that I, you know, from my kids and yours, even though yours are a bit older, I'm just like making better decisions, leading healthier lifestyles. I mean, for me, I consider that a win. You know, I just like the objective here is to produce a better, you know, more confident, stable human. You know, well done, children, despite what could have been, right? So that's, So apart then, just because I am interested in the curricular aspect, hence, you know, the ed tech and whatnot show, I guess I would say, you said a 3-year program, coursework. And do you remember the learning platform you used? Was it like Blackboard or Desire to Learn?
No, we used Brightspace, which is the same thing I use with my students now.
Brightspace. Okay, yeah. Good stuff. And now, so sneak preview here, folks. What ends up happening is that Kathleen finishes her program, and then shortly, it wasn't that long then. I'm just trying to do the mental math here before you actually – So your teaching experience is now distance based. Is it for Memorial then, or okay? So you're teaching?
Yes. No. I'm teaching at MBCC here.
Okay. And see, there we go. That's like things you might want to consult with your guest on the show. So where actually do you do your thing? So right. So you wound down your study. And you did that largely, you used Brightspace for that. So then what was the difference?
I graduated in 2020 as well.
Graduated during COVID. And did you actually attend your graduation? Well, no, virtual, right? That's, did you do the virtual qualification?
We did have a weird little thing one day that I didn't even realize was supposed to be like, we were supposed to have invited people.
Okay.
I was like, is this actually it? Okay. I didn't know. But no, that's fine.
It's and so then, I mean, we're at 2024. What led you then to the MBCC work?
Honestly, I went to MBCC as well. So in like 96, 97.
Oh, within which program? Sorry.
Human Services in St. John.
Okay. Right on. Yeah.
So, and I really loved the program. I thought it was great. And I always thought I would love to have a chance. And like, the more I went on in my career, I thought, I think I would be able to do this. And I just wanted to have the chance to kind of give it a try to see if it was something that fit for me. I knew content wise that wasn't going to be the issue. I just thought I have no idea if this is something I can pursue or not. And so I would often check the MBCC job postings. And when I heard that this new social service community worker program was coming, I thought, oh, like everything I read about it, I thought that looks like
right up my alley. Yeah.
And so then one day there was the job. And so I put everything into my application and here I am.
Well, good for you. I mean, that's really, it sort of speaks to the fact that you've kind of built up a career, a path in this area, and now being able to kind of make this transition to the point where I think you're probably you're sharing a lot with your students, not just from your significant experience over the years in at least a few different settings, but now as well, I would think, just based on hearing what you've just described of the program, having some relevance directly from your training, vis-a-vis your master's courses and your BSW stuff too, right? Is that the case?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So then, if I may, in sort of the grander picture, because when we last left you within the point of your career, you had you finished up with the counseling for the nonprofit, and there's been now sort of you're on to another endeavor, right, in addition to the NBCC teaching, which we're going to return to, but you've been kind of, again, taking your own path, sort of almost in an entrepreneurial kind of spirit, if I can think of it like that.
Yeah, honestly, I'm one of those people, and I mean, I know that this is definitely not the case for everybody, but COVID was kind of perfect for me. So when everything shut down, I was finishing up my internship. I was doing that at the School of Social Work, actually, at STU.
Okay.
That's where I did my practical hours for my master's. And right on. Everything kind of shut down at the exact same time. And I happened to have, and I happened to have exactly the right number of hours to be able to say I'm done. Now, that being said, I did continue on because a lot of my work was directly with students, and they had this whole, you know, they had a simulation running and they needed somebody to keep doing it. So I kept doing that. But everything kind of fell apart at my place of work as well. There was a real, we had some really poor leadership at the time. And so I decided after 10 years that was it, I was done. And so I just started making plans at that time to start a private practice. I always kind of thought in the back of my mind, well, with a master's, I can do that as a backup plan. And then it turns out that in a pandemic, when the only counseling available is virtual, it's very practical, logistically speaking, to start up a private practice. There's almost no overhead. You need practice software and some kind of a platform to be able to speak with people. That's it. You got your insurance already. You've got your registration. You're good to go.
I think what you just described is a really unique insight into that whole time. I think to speak to the stressors leading to a drastic change, leading to an opportunity, I just think that sort of is as much to do with your canniness and your sort of clever handling of your own career, in as much as, at least I find as I'm getting older, I've really got a low threshold for what I'm willing to accept. When you talk about weak leadership within your organization, I don't, you know, propose to spend a ton of time on that. But let's just say I guess had an experience like that when I was around the pandemic, very weak leadership in my, you know, organizational unit, the guy that I reported to just, anyway, not going to spoil a good conversation talking about that, but it's sort of like the stresses of the pandemic cause tensions or fissures that, you know, to just rise to the surface, yes, and become, yes, visible in ways that maybe, you know, weren't as obvious, absolutely, or blatant, right?
Yep.
That certainly was a turning point for me where I just knew, like, at my previous institution, my previous role, it was right around then where I was just like, yeah, I really don't think that this is going to be sustainable in terms of, like, what I'm, you know, going to be doing over the long term. And so for you, transitioning into a virtual counseling model, I mean, again, not to speak to people like kind of older than us or, but I mean, you know, of our, you know, relative cohort, we have the benefit of having grown up somewhat largely with the internet as it was developing. You know, if you would spend 10 years, if you were 10 years older and you spent your whole time in like a bricks and mortar kind of setting, for your practice and for your education as well, it may have been a different kind of, you may not have been able to capitalize that. You may not have thought, oh, I can do a virtual based, you know, synchronous kind of counseling setting. So again, just for my own technology-ish kind of nerddom, would you mind, I guess, describing what your service model looked like? And I guess maybe talk about how it started as compared to where it is now in a post-pandemic context.
Okay. So when you say
so like in terms of like, how were you meeting with people? Was it just like literally what we're doing right now?
I use a platform called Doxy, which is a really unfortunate, strange name for an online platform. Doxy, like D-O-X. Okay. But it's Doxy, it's very simple. Clients they don't even have to download anything, right? I just send them a link, boom, there we are, we meet. And there, I have very little problems with it. So right, yeah, on. So initially it was me in this room, just meeting with clients. I'm extremely fortunate in that during my time at Family Enrichment, I worked with a lot of great interns over the years from social work and different, and like the counseling program at UNB when they were doing their internships. And so these are actually the only people that know like how I work, because they were actually, they're the only people that have ever been in the room with me. Right.
Right.
And so as a consequence of this, a wonderful consequence of this, when I told people I was starting a private practice, all these people who, many of whom have been interns and were now friends, were like, oh, well, I know who I'm going to send, you know, my, you know, people to. So I had awesome. Absolutely no issue getting referrals from people who knew that I would be a good fit. That was the really important part, right?
That is awesome.
Very awesome. Yeah. So super lucky, super fortunate.
From like, sorry, but just, I mean, I think it's sort of really cool that your cohort, right? Your educational cohort that you sort of hung together and, you know, stayed in touch as people do. I'm thinking through Facebook or whatnot, or social media connections largely, which is what everybody does. And having that sort of, you know, many years after the fact, sustain and support your new venture wherein you're going after what I think everybody wants at a certain point in their career, professional autonomy, agency, flexibility relative to the kind of lifestyle that you're hoping to achieve. I guess let's give credit to Mike for kind of being around while you're starting any kind of a new venture, right? I mean, I remember like what I put my spouse through, my then wife, when I was doing my doctoral study. I mean, yeah. It's the people around you, you know, the significant other who makes the stuff even possible, right? Absolutely. Whether it's financially or, you know, yeah. in terms of family support or whatnot. I think really just all yes. the people around us really enable the stuff, right?
Yeah. And I think that's especially true when I went to finally finish my BA, like finish up that last year and do my BSW. Yeah. I didn't do any dishes during that entire time. Mike did all of that, right? The kids were young at that time. So that would have been a near impossibility for me to have done on my own, for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, yeah.
Shout out to me.
Totally, right? And the significant others out there who may be catching the podcast, because it goes on LinkedIn and this and that, right? So just again, to those who have helped, because we all help other people in certain ways, and it's just nice to acknowledge when we ourselves have been helped, I think. So, yeah. So again, you kind of use this industry standard platform now for your distance counseling. So, again, you kind of got a very good client base kind of out of the gate. So would you say that within about a year, you kind of had the basis for what you're doing now in terms of people that you work with? Or, I mean, how in terms of
I would say
how you're delivering service now, like, are you still doing the virtual stuff mainly?
I do both.
Okay.
So right now, I did that. I think by July, I actually had rented an office downtown, found, you know, yep. had a like-minded colleague who was looking to do, we actually did our master's together. We did both of our degrees together.
Awesome.
And so we rented a space together and, you know, didn't have a whole lot of in-person clients at that time, but the rent was good because of the timing and it was a good starter.
Go COVID!
Because initially we weren't going to take it, and they just wrote back to us like, "Would you rent it for this?" And we're like, "Okay."
As opposed to the zero that I'm getting for it now, sure. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So we were there for a year, and yeah, more in person clients. Although there was so much back and forth in those early days of COVID, where you know we had all the phases. Remember the yellow and the orange and the red and all that. So I had to have, you know, guidelines around what got done and what was, you know, I would say at that time, yeah, very few in-person clients, but I still needed to have a space in order to have any in-person clients. Right.
Yeah.
And so we stayed there for a year. And then a year after that, I found a beautiful office space downtown with four big offices in it found some more like-minded people. And we kind of operate as a collective. We share resources. We'll refer clients to one another, consult with one another, all that kind of stuff. There's been a little bit of turnover there, but it's been excellent.
Awesome. So
by the time that this job came up for me in what, summer of 2022? Was that all it was? So basically I just stopped taking any new clients. I haven't taken a new client since then. I've just been kind of slowly dwindling down, just seeing a few people a week. And at this point it's probably about half and half, I guess, virtual and in person. Yeah.
Well, and again, I just think it's so tremendous that after spending a year a decade in a setting where you were kind of at the dictates of a manager and your clients, now you are the manager effectively. You manage yourself, you decide who and to what extent and even the modality. So I just think your business model there and the fact that, you know, your shared office sort of setting and everything, it sounds like you've really thoughtfully implemented what a lot of people might consider but not necessarily act on. So that's just a personal observation as sort of being somebody who's friends with you and over the years and kind of seen it happen. I guess now, just because we've been 35 minutes into here, and I sort of promised you we try and keep it to about 45. I am curious. I really do believe everything is leading up to a teaching moment of sorts, teaching moments where you're the student lead up to being an apprentice, being a mentor, being a leader to others, it's an ongoing lifelong trajectory. And again, that's why I was really pleased when you said yes to do this, because you're just somebody who I kind of look at and go, this person gets it. They're not just sort of content to just kind of stay with the one thing and then just kind of check out and watch TV or play sports or whatever.
Sometimes,
Well, sure, of course, naturally, as we all do. But as somebody who, it's sort of like if you're not moving forward in your career in a different way or trying to find new areas to operate under, you've already spoken largely to, the resonant, what sort of made you interested in it. So it's a 2-year diploma in human services, is it?
No, human services is a program. Human service practitioner is a program MBCC offers, but this is a bit different. This is the social service community.
And so it's at the point now where it was a new program. You joined for the first class.
I joined 1 year in. So what they did, they rolled it out at all 6 campuses the first year, and so that first cohort was taught by one instructor at each campus, and there was sharing, at that point it was blended. So they had some virtual classes and so people would have one or people would have two or maybe even 3 cohorts that they would teach to online. So there was one person who was a permanent MBCC employee in Fredericton who had that class in person, and she was kind of their only in-person person. And then they hired 2 more of us for the following year.
So then an entire more than one cohort at this point has begun the program, completed it, and graduated at this point. Yeah, so
first cohort graduated last year, and the first cohort that I've had since the beginning is graduating this year.
That's awesome. Then you have, in terms of your kind of assignment relative to this, are you sort of, how many classes do you teach in a given semester?
3 or 4.
Yeah.
And the courses are, so it's a little bit weird. So we've got our semesters, but then we have sessions, which is basically quarters. So the classes went on a 7-1-7 for each term. So they've got a 1 week break in between these 2 7-weeks. So some of those classes will run the whole 14 weeks, and some of them are just crammed into 7 weeks, 6 hours a week.
Getting equivalent credits, like when in the summer you do like a, you know, like month long, like a 3 month course. And I gotcha.
Yeah.
So it sounds then that's a pretty dense package of courses, if I could think of it that way. Yes. I guess it must be interesting for you then. So you've sort of got the same three or four courses that you teach at various junctures. So, or
I have not yet had. Yeah, I haven't yet had a term where everything I'm teaching is something I've taught before. Wow. I really look forward to seeing what that's like. I feel like that's going to be a lot less hours at night.
Well, I mean, so to speak to, I guess, the curricular aspect, since you're bringing it there. So now these courses, first of all, again, as somebody with social workers in the family and somebody who just kind of has a natural affinity for the kinds of folks who are involved in such endeavors, I mean, I guess you from where you started, you know, they didn't start you like, here's, you know, teach this many classes. I mean, it sounds like this is something that you've gone into and they've kind of handed you more responsibility and you asked for more responsibility. It seems like, is this something where, no, that's not the case? Okay.
Nope. So I got hired, I started the last week of August, and then the next week I was teaching three classes.
Wow. Right out of the gate.
Yeah, and one of those classes was research methods, and it wasn't finished being built.
So can I then, without disclosing any tradecraft or whatnot, when you are sort of set up, as it were, to deliver these courses online through Brightspace, so then I take it, not having used that specific platform before, but that there would be an instance where, okay, so students would log into sort of their institution-wide portal, their Brightspace portal. They go in, and then sort of each class that they're involved in has a sort of little subsection within it, right? Like its own little site within within the app. And so were you then creating the resources that were needed within your online environment, or did it sort of come with like course outline, certain readings already established? How much curriculum building did you actually have to do, I guess is what I'm getting at.
In the beginning, I didn't know. So in the beginning, while everything was not necessarily set up for me, we have, I'm extremely lucky. We had excellent communities of practice. With the other instructors at the other campuses that were teaching our common courses, right? Who were very sensitive to the overwhelm that a brand new baby instructor would feel at being plunked into this situation, right?
A baby instructor, like that. That's like a good term. I do like that.
I'm now a toddler instructor. I feel like I'm in my toddlerhood, maybe. So there wasn't a lot that I like. So at that stage, all the outlines, the course outlines, the assignments, those were all a done deal by the time I got there. Right.
Nice. Okay.
So that's done. Now how everything gets taught is up to me. Right. So again, very lucky. I had people sharing all kinds of resources. And in the beginning, I literally didn't know. I was like, do I have to teach this exactly the way you gave it to me? Like, I didn't know anything. Right. Since then, they send all of us new instructors, on a adult education instructor development program, which I just graduated from in December. So that was one class at a time, except for the summer where I had to, you know, do a lot more. That also means I get to now build my time so I get summers off now that I'm qualified.
Awesome.
Yes. So in any case, what was the question?
Well, okay. So no, you've spoken to it really well, to the effect that, you know, your initial resources, were largely provided. I really like how you describe, because I've experienced that myself in various roles, the community of practice that sort of, you know, people wanting you to be successful, people who are invested in their students because you share students across the program. So when it comes from a place of, hey, let's welcome this person, let's help them out, because ultimately that's going to have a positive impact on the students and the overall learning experience. Again, just I guess I didn't realize that you were teaching like quite at that volume or quite at that tempo. I guess I would just say, I mean, again, just kind of knowing you as a person, I'm not surprised that you sort of seem to have gravitated towards this. I guess my questions as we sort of make the decline here, as we start to wind down, you don't seem to have had or described any particular issues with teaching online. Has the format itself presented challenges? And I mean, just generally speaking, because you've now been a teacher for a few years, a couple of years, what are you getting out of it that you might not have expected, being new, as you say, to being an educator?
Well, I guess, in terms of the online thing, so most of my classes now are in person. In the beginning, I was teaching, like, the very first class that I literally sat down to teach was a double cohort of my students and St. John's students who I'd never met. And of course, nobody turns on their camera. And so you're just talking to a wall of circles, right? Very first class ever.
I got you.
And there were 56 students. It was a lot.
That's a lot. Yeah.
So, yeah. And I don't think, for me, the real learning curve there has been like, how do you engage people in online learning? Because it is a different ballgame altogether. And I'm still not fully there at all. But the difference now being that, so on Fridays, we have virtual days. But these are students that I'm with for at least a couple other days during the week. It's a very different situation.
So you're seeing them in person.
Right.
And then you have sort of some follow-up, some continuity vis-a-vis online. So that's a really interesting approach. I mean, to me, again, the terminology I'd use from my field is that's a really cool blended model of delivery wherein you're sort of using intentionally the online capability for certain aspects of the course design, but then sort of leveraging the immediacy and the dynamicism of the in-person environment, right? So that's, I mean, to me, what you just sort of described sounds like it could be potentially rich for learning purposes and from a teaching standpoint. I guess really the question for you, what are you enjoying about this? As a teacher, are you finding anything maybe that surprised you about it? I mean, what makes you sort of want to continue with it? Because you do sound like you're interested in continuing with it.
For sure. Yeah, I am. Actually, I just signed an extension on my term. Nothing permanent yet, but term extension.
Right. So. Oh, that's awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah. I can't really say it any, there's no point in me trying to put flowery language to this. I just enjoy it. I enjoy watching my students, you know, learn, grow. It's amazing to see the year ones come back and I'm like, oh my God, you've all grown up so much. I feel like you just see them really growing and like their brains are growing. They understand social problems at such a more, like the degree to which they understand this stuff as they move through the program. And also they're doing their practicums and stuff too, right? I just find it super satisfying. And I also will say that I take probably a bit of a different approach to some of the subject matter than other people would.
Okay.
And I think I do that because I think it's important. It resonates with them, right? So I feel like the fact that I don't need this job, honestly, I feel very free to take risks that I wouldn't otherwise, right? And so when I say I'm talking about risk with content, right, with taking a bit of a different approach than other people would, because I think it's important for them to go out into the field.
I take it you're sort of referring to sort of what some might refer to as sort of more of an activist standpoint.
More of an activist standpoint. That's definitely true with, like, I teach community development. But then when I teach mental health and counseling, more of a critical mental health view on things. Critical.
There we go. That's the word I was after. Yeah.
For a lot of these students, these are ideas that they've never had language for, but they've experienced in some way or another. And it's just important to me to know that they're going out into the field, not necessarily treating everyone like a diagnosis. I think that's very important to me.
The human connection within the human facing service. Yeah. Yeah. Making sure people are recognized as individuals and not just as cases and aggregations of data.
And making sure not to harm people and make assumptions about who they are and what they are based on, you know, a snapshot.
Demographic, socioeconomic, or health kind of related factors.
Yep. Yeah, I think, I could go on for like 3 hours about this, but I think, you know, one of the big pieces that's missing when we talk about like education around mental health, we all know that the social determinants of health are very important, that they're very connected to mental health. But in practice, that is not how it plays out, right? In practice, it's about diagnosis. It's not about the fact that this person lived 3 years of abuse, right? Or it's not about the fact that this person is poor and is wondering how they're going to get through tomorrow. Like, how are they supposed to be okay? Right? And people know that and they give lip service to it. But at the end of the day, it gets written down in a chart that they're anxious and depressed and possibly have borderline personality disorder. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, that's my hobby horse.
Well, and it pursues then, just in expressing it in such terms, it then sort of puts you down a certain path of problematizing and stigmatizing certain areas which are ultimately counter effective to, you know, treating people with dignity and respect relative to their situation. So
that's a big part of what I love about it.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, this is sort of where I feel like you, that if we had another couple of hours really dive into, you know, the days and the cases and the minutiae there, because I just think I honestly think that would be perhaps a worthy follow-up. I really am grateful to have had the opportunity here just to even find out in a little bit more detail. I'm just like, I know she teaches something for an institution. Okay, let's get her on the show. So I'm coming away with some knowledge about your actual thing. Which maybe hasn't come through in our last virtual beers meeting with Mike or the one before that. No, but I guess I would just give you the opportunity here, Kathleen, if there's anything else you wanted to say before we sign her off. Is there anything that you think anybody listening might want to know about or think? Or
Nothing comes to my mind.
Well, nor should it do. I'm just really pleased that you agree to spend a bit of time here. And it's just one of these things where you're talking about a hobby horse. I mean, for me, this is kind of conversations about education with people from across the educational world. And when I can match it up with people that I have a great deal of personal respect for, as well as a professional exercise, I just that's how I get my kicks, some of them these days. So thanks a lot for being here, Kathleen.
Yeah,
appreciate it a lot.
Me. Yeah,
absolutely. Sayonara from me. Take care, everybody. Appreciate you very much. Thanks for listening. And until next time.